This is Jay Sekulow. Interesting new poll. Trump leads Biden by double digits, and that's why they're trying to get him off the ballot.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Sekulow. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast. Friday. This, by the way, is the last day for our matching moment on these cases that are trying to get Donald Trump off the ballot. And I don't care if you're for Trump or against Trump. The idea that a candidate that's qualified, that meets the qualifications, cannot be on the ballot because some Secretary of State says, I think there was an insurrection and it's his fault, without an adjudication, is outrageous. Not only not an adjudication, there hasn't been a charge. But what is interesting today is a new poll from Suffolk University says that Trump is beating Biden, ready but for this, folks, by 11 points when it comes to who the American people trust the most with our economy. I made a joke, Logan, if somebody would bring a lawsuit saying, keep him off the ballot because the economy's a mess, as the UAW's now in strike, which could, by the way, we're going to have Harry Hutchinson on, could be serious economic repercussions. Who would have believed this? But it's an we're at a very interesting moment on all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to break down that poll even more coming up because it really is pretty fascinating. It's not just a single question poll. There was even others like, what one word describes for you the state of the economy? If you combine, there's excellent, good, fine, growing, improving, getting better, fair, average, fine. And then it gets into horrible, terrible, awful, bad, poor, weak, crashing, sad, dismal, crashing, struggling, disastrous, shambles, chaotic, confusing, upheaval. Of those combined would be 61.9%.
Believe the economy is either horrible, terrible, awful, bad, poor, weak, sad, or dismal, crashing, struggling, disastrous, and shambles, chaotic, messy, confusing, unequal.
Yeah, and there's plenty of others like anxiety, worried, and scared, but we just combined those. The worst of the worst, almost 62%, 61.9% would be the one word you describe the state of the economy. And obviously, the converse of that saying, well, who would you trust? Overwhelmingly, they would trust President Trump over Joe Biden. So it does show a lot of what's happening in the country right now.
You know, it's a fascinating moment in our history because we have all of that happening. At the same time, we have an unprecedented move to disqualify a candidate from public office. And when I say that, you have to just look at what's happened so far. Four indictments against a former president, his poll numbers are stronger. That doesn't work. What do? They organize groups like Crew and these other individual groups and some Republican rhinos. I mean, that establishment types that do not want him in office have gotten together and they started these lawsuits. Now, we told you when we were on the air, I think it was yesterday. Was it yesterday, Will? We had lawyers in court. On Monday, our lawyers are going to be back in court in Colorado while we're, at least as planned, while we're on the air. So we may be able to, and they're televising it. So we may be able to break in to that coverage while we're on the air, and I'll be able to give you commentary. Mike Melito, our counsel out in Colorado, is handling that for us. We have brought in an unbelievable team of lawyers, by the way, for this. In addition to ACLJ teams, our affiliates on this are the best there are. This is a very serious moment for our country. And we, tonight at midnight, is the end of our matching moment. That's our deadline to help us fight for our constitutional right to vote. And that's what we're talking about here. Without your support, we can't fight this fight because, believe me, this is not in the budget. It wasn't in the budget, Logan, for Colorado. It's certainly not in the budget for 13 more states that have been added now.
That's right, and that's why we need you. And again, this is the last day of our matching moment. Again, that means that all donations made are doubled during this. It means if you make a $20 donation, there is somebody who's pledged another $20 on the other side, and so on and so on and so on. And we've had some amazing days. The response to this shows clearly this is an issue you care about.
It really is, and we want to win this because, and this is going to the Supreme Court, there's no doubt about it. So we're prepared. But this is where you come in, folks. We've raised a lot of money in the last 2 days, but today's the day. It's the last day of it. So this is, you know, at midnight tonight, it's over, and we got to move on to other things. We'll be handling the cases, but other topics. Go to ACLJ.org right now. If you're watching or listening to us or on radio, ACLJ.org, matching moment, your gifts will be doubled. Defend the constitutional right to vote. What can be more important? Defending the constitutional right to vote, ACLJ.org, matching moment right now.
Seculo. We have a packed show right now, so we're going to keep going. We obviously still have the matching moment going on, but we are joined today by Harry Hutchinson. We're going to talk about this auto workers strike that's happening. It obviously is getting attention, but maybe not as much attention as it should. There's obviously a lot of things happening
well,
in the world.
Well, when the economic impact of this is felt, let's go right to it. And by the way, you know, one of the polls were, who do you trust with the economy more? Trump was up by double digits. So I made a joke, half joking, Harry, saying, you know, somebody should file a lawsuit saying Joe Biden shouldn't be allowed on the ballots because of economic deprivation under some constitutional theory. And I'm making a joke by the way I say that. Point is, the U.S. United Auto Workers have launched at least a form of a strike that could grow rather rapidly. Well, you follow that industry pretty closely, especially from Detroit. Where are we and what's happening here?
Well, first, our listeners should recognize that over the next 4 or 5 days, the U.S. economy will take a $5 billion hit, even from a limited strike. That's number one. Number two.
We define a limited strike, Harry, for people so they know what that means.
Well, a limited strike simply means a limited number of plants are going to be on strike. The workers at other plants are going to go into work so long as their employer allows them to go into work. And in essence, they're asking the employers, the automakers, to subsidize the strikers who are out on strike. This strike will be somewhat disruptive. It could be obviously more disruptive if all of the plants are shut down. But I'm not necessarily sure the union has enough money in its strike fund to fully fund all workers if indeed all of them are on strike at the same time. So this is a strategic move, probably from an economic perspective, a brilliant move by the labor union. But I think the bottom line is this strike, in large measure, is fueled by Biden economics along with the Green New Deal. Essentially, we have a fossilized president who has launched a war on fossil fuel. So Biden's economic policies are designed to ensure that the United States becomes a failed economic and perhaps political state. So keep in mind, Ford Motor loses $10,000 per electric vehicle, $10,000. So the more vehicles, electric vehicles they produce, the less money they have to give to workers.
You know,
that's the direct result of Bidenomics.
The question I think that's on everybody's mind, though, is how is this going to affect me? I mean, I'm thinking like especially your generation.
Yeah.
How does an auto strike affect me?
Well, we saw what happened with just the COVID years of just the facilities being shut down. Just that happened has still having major impacts, whether that is getting new vehicles became a struggle, getting old vehicles. All of a sudden, the prices of old vehicles skyrocketed because you couldn't get a new car. Then new cars finally started rolling in and they didn't work half the time. Half the features were gone because you couldn't get the chips from China. So we know that's what happens when it's pretty much a strike that's not voluntary. A strike that's happening based on what's happening on the global stage obviously that was from a medical point of view, that shut down a lot of factories in China, shut down a lot of the factories here. Now, so we have a little bit of a taste of what that looks like. So we see that it takes years to pick up the pace. And as you brought up with electric cars, someone who is interested in them, I do think they're fun. I think there's like a toy element to it where I'm interested in the tech behind it. I really am. Like, I think it's interesting. I finally, after 3 years of being on a waiting list for an electric car from GM, got my, it's time for you to order. I said, oh, you know, by now I've gotten to the point where I'm like, I don't know. 3 years ago, I was ready to go because I thought this is fun. Now I've seen all the issues they're having. I was questioning, but I'm like, you know what? I'll still try to go ahead because you know why? I found out I could flip it for $30,000 or $40,000 over the sticker price. So if you're able to get a new car, then you're going to be able to sell it for more. And yes, you may be contributing a bit to the problem, but this becomes sort of the running problem and issue that happens. But at the end of the day, the dealer, really discouraging me from buying it.
Really?
Like, I cannot even really get them to answer. They're like, oh, but what about this ready-to-go truck that's already here? I'm like, hey, what about the EV that you want? No, don't worry. You know, well, look over here. You know, I feel like it's that kind of thing because they know the economic impact of it is not necessarily a positive, maybe for that individual dealer, but maybe not for the worker at large.
So then there's no economics behind this to support what they're doing.
Absolutely.
It's driving inflation to unbelievable numbers. I just filled up my car with gas. It's back up over $5 a gallon, right. Or right at $5.
Yeah, gas prices are up 60%.
Okay. You go to a restaurant now and order, you know, and take the grandkids to have burgers and, you know, and a shake. And you get the bill and you think you're eating at a steak restaurant because the prices are so high. And then at the same time, and this is the irony to me, Harry, they're trying to keep the guy that one thing he really did well was the economy. I mean, no doubt about that. They want him off the ballot.
Absolutely. And so a lot of this is driven by ideology. Bidenomics, the Green New Deal, that's driven by ideology. It makes no sense economically, environmentally, or in the long run, politically. Keep in mind that in order to produce a single lithium battery for an electric vehicle, it requires the movement of 500,000 pounds of dirt and minerals. That requires the expenditure of what? Energy. And so that if you buy an electric vehicle, you also have to face the fact that in order to charge your electric vehicle, you have to burn fossil fuel. And so you have to burn natural gas, gasoline, petroleum, coal, you name it. Yep. And so electric vehicles could make some sense in the long run if the United States was a nuclear we had a nuclear powered electric grid. We don't. And so at the end of the day, so much of this makes no sense. But the bottom line for the American people is that over the last 3 years, they've received a wage increase or an income increase of about $230 to $300 per week. However, with that additional income, it now costs an additional $100 to remain even. So they're falling behind.
Yeah,
so that is why the union, the UAW, is demanding up to a 45% wage increase plus a reduction in hours per week from 40 to 32 hours per week. So a lot of this makes sense. And it's the last point I will make is that the labor union members, they don't support Biden's woke agenda. They don't support the Green New Deal. They don't support Biden policies. So in many respects, Joe Biden, who claims to be a union president, has become a stranger to the to working class people and to the union movement.
All right.
Let's take a call.
Yeah, okay, Chris. This obviously, let's go to Chris in Nevada. On Nevada in line one. You're on the air.
Hey, Chris.
Hi, thank you. First, I'd like to say I love the way Professor Hutchinson words things. But my comment is it possible the Biden White House wants the economy to get worse and worse, and then next year before the election, have it improve a little bit and put on a show that things are improving?
So in other words, that now it's on an upswing. That's a risky move because if the economy continues like it is or gets worse, bringing up a little bit may be out of his control.
Absolutely. So one of the issues that the Biden administration would have to deal with is the issue of lags. And so one of the things that we should also focus on is interest rates. Interest rates are likely to rise even further on home mortgages. That is driving a decline in home purchases, new construction. So I think it's a very risky strategy. That may be what the Biden administration is aiming for. But also keep in mind the Biden administration would love to force some form of depopulation along with a reduction in economic growth. Why? Because they're committed to climate change.
Let me tell you this, and this ties right back into this whole election. So now we got 14 states that are trying to take off the ballot the one guy that has proven he can fix an economy, and that's the former president. Now, whether you want to vote for him or not, that's your decision. But the idea that that wouldn't even be an option or a choice because 14 state bureaucrats decide on the left that they don't want this guy in is absurd. So we're in court in Colorado right now. We are entering another case, probably Oklahoma, Monday. We are getting ready to issue letters to all 50 states. We are in the last day of our matching moment. Tonight at midnight, that's it. And as Logan, as you said, the amount of money we raise for this is what we can spend because this was not in the budget.
Yeah, I think that we need to make sure that's clear, that this is how we're accounting for this. This is how we're budgeting for this project coming up, is specifically with this matching moment. Obviously, we're able to go to donors and say we'd like to open up the matching funds, and those who have committed to that will do so. But they can't do it without your response, because when you respond, that unlocks that budget. So for this, that's outside of the norm, something we hadn't planned on, this is why we need your support, the ACLJ. It's why we do not only matching challenges, not only why we do different drives, but when we have these moments, these big moments right now that are going to cost, and that is a conversation that has to happen around here, which is, what is the budget going to be for this project or for this
suit?
It's
stressing our limits right now.
Yeah. So honestly, to be able to do that, be able to get the right people in place, we need your support. Go to ACLJ.org right now. That's ACLJ.org. You can call us at 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Secular. We are going to take your calls coming up, because a lot of you have called in, but we also are going to discuss more, Dad, on this 14th Amendment case. I think people need a breakdown. Maybe they're just joining us now. They don't understand the ramifications.
All right.
And maybe we need to give them a refresher to start this off, because we are filing in this. We are deeply involved in this. We have filed in this. We need your support, but maybe we need to go back and explain a little bit of why we need the support.
Let me put up on the screen, and then I'll read it for our radio audience what we have here. And this is our Colorado Republican State Central Committee. That's our clients. Verified petition in intervention seeking declaratory injunctive relief pursuant to this Colorado Rules of Civil Procedure to get an injunction to stop this attempted removal of Donald Trump from the ballot, who otherwise qualifies. That has been filed. So the motion to intervene has been filed. There was a hearing yesterday. There is now another hearing Monday. And the court issued an order in that case, Andy, late last night.
That is correct. The court basically said, because the Secretary of State had indicated she was going to oppose our attempt on behalf of the Republican committee to intervene in the case. Intervene meaning become a party in the case and be heard on something that deals with us, the Republican Party, I should say, politically directly. The Colorado Secretary of State had indicated that she was not going to consent to that. And the judge basically said, well, in an order, very just two paragraphs, that said that if that's the case, she, quote, should be prepared to discuss the bases for that opposition at the status conference. In other words, you better be ready to tell me why. I've never seen an order like that.
And let me tell you what it also says. She's a defendant, technically. So they sued the Secretary of State, just as they sued Donald Trump. We're intervening as the GOP, the party, in the litigation. She is a defendant just like us, our clients. You would think she wants a vigorous defense. You got another group of lawyers in there. So you know what this tells you? Exactly what's going on. If she's opposing our admission, why is that? Because we're going to put up a vigorous defense saying she can't remove him from office on a self-executing view with a 14th Amendment Section 3's disqualification clause used last in 1918. That's why. So, Logan, that's what's really going on here. And what this motion's already shown is that they're in cahoots. They're working together. Even though she's technically a defendant, she is really a plaintiff.
We actually have a call related to this that we should go to. Let's go to Heather, who's calling in Montana, watching on Rumble online too. Heather, you're on the air.
Hi, Heather.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I just wanted to inquire in regards to this pending litigation in Colorado. Mm-hmm. So being in Montana, we have our primary far later than the majority of the country. And so we have an interest in who our Republican nominee is. So would it behoove us contacting our attorney general to see if he could file suit in this case, which may escalate this up to the Supreme Court?
Well, it's going to go to the Supreme Court regardless, because ultimately, win or lose, because the Supreme Court's going to have to be the final arbiter of what that 14th Amendment Clause 3 means, because there is no law on it. There's, like I said, it was applied once in 1918. That individual, by the way, was not seated. And then ultimately, with the Supreme Court's engagement on the case, the member of Congress was seated. So they try to use the same thing, insurrection, rebellion. It's interesting, and Heather, you bring up a very good point, and that is, does the denial in one state impact the denial of, for does it impact the other states? And the answer to that question actually is Yes, Andy, yes, it does.
Yes. Heather brings up a very good point, because what happens in other states does affect you in Montana, and it affects you because your candidate or a Republican candidate will not be on a ballot and will therefore have less of a chance to garner the electoral votes needed to win the election. So everything is interconnected. It's a republic of 50 states, all of which one acts in one affect the other. And that's a very interesting legal point that you raise, Heather, because what happens in Colorado or in Michigan or in other jurisdictions is going to affect what happens in Montana and all over the place. You raise a very interesting point, very good legal point.
All right, let's continue on. We do have a second half hour, by the way, coming up. We still got a few minutes on the broadcast, but let's continue on.
Yeah, she actually made a statement, okay? This is the Secretary of State. This kind of proves the point of what we're talking about here. So listen to what she said.
If someone swears to uphold the Constitution, they are disqualified from holding office if they go and engage in insurrection, rebellion, or aid or comfort to the enemies of the Constitution. And Donald Trump incited an insurrection.
So this is the Secretary of State, so-called defendant, sued by Crew and these other groups. This is the so-called defendant who should be saying, oh, no. Whatever the parties put forward that meet the qualification, my job is to make sure the voters of our state have the choices that they want. She goes, no. He did the insurrection. She's self-adjudicated that. She's the judge. She's the jury. She's the executioner, okay? There's been no charge of insurrection or rebellion by any prosecutor anywhere. None. So what they're trying to do is make it self-executing. And what we mean by that is that you don't have to have a judge and a jury and a court proceeding, Andy, that the bureaucrat gets to make the decision.
Yes, and that's not how a constitutional republic works. Look, the Constitution sets out what the requirements are to hold the office. The state Republican Party, in this case in Colorado, makes the determination of what the qualifications are and who should be on the ballot, not the Secretary of State. This is not self-executing. If it's an insurrection, you have the right to be tried, to be convicted, to have the right to appeal. You don't go to a dictionary definition in 1828 of what an insurrection was and put it on the ballot and say, you're guilty of an insurrection. I'm the Secretary of State. You're off the ballot. That's not how it works.
But that's exactly what's happening here. And the fact that she is already making these statements and she's a defendant along with Donald Trump. I mean, she's on the same side technically as President Trump. Now, think about this for a minute. But she's already determined that she wants him off the ballot. So all she is a figurehead defendant, because she's the mechanism that they will use to do this. And like I said, I don't care if you're for Donald Trump, against Donald Trump, you want him to be president, you don't want him to be president. Here's what I'm telling you. The moment candidates that legally qualify for office can be removed by the whim of an elected official from another party or any party, is when the entire constitutional republic's voting mechanisms, our right to participate in our government, is completely lost. So here's what we're telling you. This is the last day of this matching moment. And as Logan said, and he's right, our budget for this is going to be based on what comes in on Wednesday, Thursday, and now Friday. This is it. So we've got 14 cases right now that we know are in litigation or about to be. We are engaging on all of them in various capacities. Some will be direct. Some may be amicus briefs. It's going to depend on the nature and the format of the case. But I'm going to tell you this, folks. The most important election case in U.S. history is happening right before our eyes. And you can be part of that history. We can't do these folks need us. These agencies need us. And we need you. So I want to encourage you to go to aclj.org right now. Make your gift to defend the constitutional right to vote in this matching moment. Your gift will be doubled. That ends midnight tonight. So if you're watching this broadcast right now, I encourage you to participate to defend the constitutional right to vote, to make sure your right to vote is protected. Go to aclj.org right now, aclj.org. Your online gift will be doubled tonight. We'll be back with the next half hour in just a moment.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jay Sekulow.
So we now know there are 14 states as part of this attack on our right to vote, and that's what I call it. It's our constitutional right to vote is being attacked. And it's being attacked by bureaucrats that want to keep Donald Trump off the ballot. Today it's Trump, tomorrow it could be somebody else. But here they've indicted the guy four times. That doesn't keep him off the ballot. So what did we do now? Oh, we come up with this article, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, the disqualification clause. And we say it's self-executing. In other words, you don't have to have a jury. You don't have to have a charge. You don't have to have a trial. You just, a state administrator, a secretary of state, state election official says, oh, no, we think he was involved in insurrection and rebellion. Therefore, he's not on the ballot. And that means your choice, wherever you are, is going to be impacted by this. Because if, let's say, Colorado was removed, well, that's a whole lot of states. Some states, remember, it's not winner-take-all for electoral votes. Now, I don't know. Check what Colorado is. It's interesting. So you take somebody off of 14 states, even if it's 14 states that normally would go to the other party, it may be proportional, and you start losing electoral votes. So we have got to intervene on this, and we've been asked to do so by the Colorado GOP. I mean, they're the ones that really have them at risk here. And as I said, the Secretary of State is opposing our motion. And Andy, it's so obvious why she's opposing the motion. And I think the judge, by the way, is seeing right through it.
Yeah, the Secretary of State in Colorado is clearly in collaboration with a plaintiff.
Even though she's a defendant.
Yeah, even though and she really should be a plaintiff in the case because she's made her statement of her position very clear. Donald Trump engaged in and incited an insurrection. Therefore, he is not qualified. Well, why are you defending your law then if what you're saying is what the plaintiffs are saying? And then why are you opposing the intervention of the Colorado Republican Party? All they want to do is get their candidate, whoever it may not be President Trump, but on the ballot. And you're a ministerial official. If the party says this is our candidate, your job is to put that candidate on the ballot, not to go to a definition of 1828 that said an insurrection is thus and so. Guess what? I've got a dictionary that says the opposite. I'm the Secretary of State in Georgia. I'm going to just say you can be on the ballot because my dictionary says something different. So that's not the way you work in the United States. That's not the way a constitutional republic operates, Jay.
Go ahead, Logan.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, I think about my kids. I think about my grandkids. We didn't have, you know, there was a lot of tumult in the 1960s, but we were not taking people off of ballots.
No.
Okay. We weren't trying to rig the system before the system gets going. I hate even using that phrase, but this is what, you know, when people get upset about election interference, when you have things like this going on, of course you're upset about election interference because who in a constitutional republic would do this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this is absurd. I think everyone knows it. And I think that's one of the problems that we've kind of discussed, which is they keep opening up a door that may backfire in the future, but they seem to not care if it's Donald Trump.
Their goal is one thing, not to have the Republican, whoever that choice is, not to have that choice if it's Donald Trump on that ballot. And he's only up by 50% in the polls in the primaries, and is up now with Biden in double digits, especially on the economy. We had Harry Hutchinson on discussing that. So here's where you come in, folks. This is it for us. Now, was this in the budget? Nope. Did we think that anybody would actually do this? Not really, but they did. So we've got to be prepared. And at the ACLJ, we always our contingency is to engage. It's the Ministry of Presence. You got to be there, which means on Monday, we're in court. Our team is there. But this is where you come in, because at midnight tonight, this matching moment expires. Defend the constitutional right to vote. That is what's at stake here in this matching moment. Any amount you donate to the ACLJ, we're getting a match for. So it's doubled. It's critical. It is, again, I want to put that graphic on the screen. Defend the constitutional right to vote. They are trying to remove the leading candidate for the Republican Party off the ballot by arguing the 14th Amendment is self-executing. Judge, jury, fact finder, executioner, not in a constitutional republic. So the ACLJ's there. We need you there with us. Go to ACLJ.org. Make that gift right now while we're on the air. We'll be back with Tulsi Gabbard in just a moment. Podcast, everyone. We got a lot going on. Unfortunately, our colleague Tulsi Gabbard's here to talk about this with us. Tulsi, you had a tweet that you sent out. I love this. Quote, the Democratic elite don't want to lose their power. If they need to replace Joe Biden, they will. So we got this unbelievable dynamic happening right now. You've got two candidates that are leading right now. Right now, it's Joe Biden, and it looks like it's Donald Trump, at least within the Democrat-Republican mix. They're trying to keep Trump off the ballot, while they're trying to prop up, at least at this point, Joe Biden. But I am getting the sense, and your tweet I find interesting, that if they need to replace Biden, and he's got now the double whammy of the Hunter indictment, and on top of that, you've got the inquiry going on right now, what was going on with all these business deals. What's your sense of where we are? I mean, you know that party, you were in it. So where do you think this is, and where does it go?
Well, first of all, Jay, I just want to say thank you to you and your team and ACLJ and all of the people who are stepping up to support your efforts to protect our democracy and to protect our right to vote. The fact that we're seeing such a concerted effort at the federal level, we're seeing the politicization of the Department of Justice, how the Biden administration is using these tools and institutions to try to take out Donald Trump so that he is not someone who voters can consider. But we're also seeing it at the state level of how they're trying to literally take away our right to make our own decisions about who we want to lead and serve this country. You know, when you look at what we're starting to see over the last few days here, where you have, you know, Nancy Pelosi and other people kind of faltering in their support for the Biden-Harris ticket. And then you see mainstream media sources now actually starting to criticize directly President Biden and Kamala Harris. It's a reminder to us all that this is bigger than President Biden and Kamala Harris. This is about the Democrat elite in permanent Washington, very much afraid that if Donald Trump gets elected once again, that their power is threatened. And this should strike a chord of fear in everyone's hearts, because they're so afraid of losing their power. They are willing to do whatever they feel they need to in order to protect it, including truly interfere in our election, take away our right to make our own decision about who we want to lead and serve our country, and dictate to us who we are allowed to vote for on the ballot. So, you know, the Democrat elite, they're looking at the situation now. You know, they put their stock in President Biden and Kamala Harris, but things are not looking very good. So I think we're starting to see this kind of transition moment where they're figuring out, well, if it's not them, who's going to carry the water for the Democrat elite in their mission to get more power, then possibly who else might it be? So regardless of what name is on the ballot, whether it's Biden, Harris, or whoever else, let's just be very clear-eyed about what they're doing, how they're undermining our democracy, and how, if they are allowed to win, they will continue to destroy the very fabric of this nation, which is exactly what we have seen throughout the Biden-Harris administration.
You know this better than anybody, because you became the focal point of the elite's attack. And I say that with respect to you, because I said on this broadcast, when you were doing the debates, I said, when you were looking at the Democratic presidential debates, I said, well, the best debater on that stage is Tulsi Gabbard. And I said, and then you were really starting to skyrocket in the polls. I remember watching this. I've known you and your family a long time. And I was watching you skyrocket up. And then and Andrew Yang kind of coming up too. And both of you at one debate with one question that they pre-plant, knowing you were going to answer honestly, and that was about late-term abortions. And you said, you know, I'm not in favor of late-term abortions. And Yang said, no, I don't like these late-term third trimester abortions. That was enough for the entire Democratic machine, it looked like, to just, like a laser beam, focus on you all to eliminate what they considered the generational threat, which were you and Yang. That, I really believe that. I may be wrong. I am not a Democratic strategist. But looking at it as your friend and on the outside, that's what it sure looked like.
First of all, thanks for the compliment on the debate, because I'm not a debater or a professional politician by any means. But in reality, Jay, you're right. That did happen on the debate stage there. They tried as much as possible to give me as little time as possible to speak to the American people, on average about 6 minutes throughout an entire 2 hour long debate. But in reality, what we experienced, what I experienced in that 2020 presidential campaign, is it began the day that I announced my candidacy. They had their ammunition preloaded, ready to go, so that within the first 24, 48 hours of my announcing my candidacy, or even my intention to run for president, the hit pieces started coming out, and they went back to their same old playbook that they always use to try to undermine those that they deem a threat, is to try to smear my, you know, character, to try to undermine my credibility, to start planting the seeds of doubt in voters' minds at a minimum, even if they don't dig into the details, just to say, hey, this person is suspicious, or someone that you can't trust, or someone that you shouldn't believe what they say. When in reality, all that I did on that debate stage, all that I did throughout my campaign, was speak the truth to the American people, and in many cases, speak the truth about how today's Democrat elite are undermining our fundamental freedoms and tearing our country apart, sending us to war, pushing us to the brink of nuclear catastrophe. I was warning people about this back in 2020, something that no other candidate and no one in the media wanted to talk about. And look at where we are today.
You know, it's just coming over the wire right now. CNN is reporting that Twitter, this is before Elon Musk, is my understanding, turned over at least 32 direct messages from the former president's account to Jack Smith, the special counsel. Now, I'm going to tell you, this is, folks, this is scary stuff when the government starts doing this, our government. And Tulsi, you serve in the military and you defend our Constitution in real combat. So, you know, my hat's off to you. But we are at a really dangerous moment in the United States right now. Really dangerous moment. Four special counsels, attempts to get people off of ballots, on and on it goes. And an administration that seems just bent on breaking the rules or creating new ones. And I just think we're at a dangerous tipping point. Maybe dangerous.
There's no question. There's no question about the danger and imminent threat to our democracy right now. You have been speaking about this in great detail, making sure that everybody has their eyes wide open about who is perpetrating this domestic threat to our democracy and to our Constitution. But it's not just the Biden administration. We talk about the Democrat elite. When we talk about permanent Washington, we have to recognize that these are, yes, people within government. They are elected. They are bureaucrats. But there are also people in the mainstream media, those whose faces you see on TV, but a lot of people who are operating behind the screen. It's also, as you've just pointed out, their friends and partners and propagandists in big tech doing their bidding. We've seen, as you've just cited one example, we've seen other examples of how the White House itself is directing the FBI to go and tell formerly known as Twitter and these other big tech companies, you will censor this person. You will cancel their account. You will silence these voices. And they'll say, oh, well, it was a suggestion or it was a concern. Anybody who knows, if the FBI comes knocking and says, hey, we really think you ought to do this, you think it'll go well for you? If you say, no, I'm not going to comply. No, that's the problem, is we have these agencies and institutions within our government that are being so politicized to go after anyone who doesn't fall in line, to go after political opponents, to go after those who threaten the power of the Democrat elite. They are willing to use, ultimately, the FBI is backed by the power of the gun. They're ultimately willing to use the power of the gun to force that compliance, to force those, whether they're individuals or companies or others, to do their bidding. So, you know, we talk often about how our democracy here in this country, because of the Democrat elite and the Biden administration, are looking more and more like a banana republic. The things that we're talking about are things that we do see happening in other countries that are led by authoritarian dictators or others. And this is my concern about this election, what we're seeing right now. You talk a lot about how this is the greatest imminent threat that we are facing. It truly is. If we do not address this now, my fear and concern is that we will it will be irreparable. The damage to our democracy will begin to be irreparable if we allow this to go on, especially in this next election.
We appreciate it. Thanks for your insight. Great having you as a colleague here on the broadcast, and thanks so much. Folks, Tulsi's right. And I'm going to tell you right now, this is, I've done election cases at the Supreme Court. Andy, we've done them at the Supreme Court, but I will tell you, nothing like this. I never would have envisioned what's going on right now. By the way, you talk about big tech, we've got another lawsuit we're launching on that. So, but let's focus on this one. As Logan said, our budget for this case is being set. It was set Wednesday, Thursday, and will be set and done tonight at midnight. That's where you come in. Go to aclj.org. That's aclj.org. Become part of our matching moment. Defend the constitutional right to vote. I never thought I'd be saying those words. But we have to defend the constitutional right to vote in this matching moment at aclj.org. It is that important to stand up and stand with us in this fight. Back with more in a moment.
Welcome back to Seculo. We are back for our final segment of the broadcast today. We had a friend stop by who I didn't even know was here. All of a sudden, I see someone waving at me, and I'm like, oh, they're like, who's up there? I was like, Ben Ferguson is here. Ben, welcome.
It's like a family reunion. I love it. I get to see the new digs, the studio, all the work you're doing here.
Ben is kind of an alumni. I mean, he's hosted this broadcast before in years past with Jordan and sometimes, I think, solo. So Ben's kind of, I put you in our alumni category.
I'll take alumni status at ACLJ any day of the week.
So Ben is also co-hosts a big podcast with Ted Cruz, of course, as a radio host in his own right as well. And
outnumbered a lot. Here's a little bit different. It's a little
No, I was just saying, and y'all are as good looking here as an outnumbered. I'm not going to lie.
Okay. Not really. Not the same.
That's
the same
probably
vibe.
A good thing, though.
Yes, absolutely.
But for a serious moment,
okay,
because I want to get to a serious moment,
we'll
because Ben has been very involved in politics, too. We're at a very pivotal point, and obviously, with co-hosting with Ted, a good friend of ours, Ted Cruz, there's this move, Ben, and you've seen it, of trying to remove Trump from the ballot.
Yeah.
And I'm saying to people, whether you're for Trump or against Trump, the reality is he's been indicted 4 times. That didn't take him out. So now this move is, and it's in 14 states.
Yeah, they'll do it.
They're certainly trying. Now, we've got a hearing, by the way, as we said earlier in the broadcast, Monday in Colorado. That seems to be kind of the lead case right now. But they are trying to remove him in any way they can.
Yeah. We talked about this last night on Verdict with Ted Cruz, and he was talking about this is exactly what Democrats are trying to do now. They're saying the law doesn't matter. We just need to find activists in states where those activists will then not interpret the law and or the Constitution. They will throw it out and they will say, we are going to get rid of Donald Trump no matter what. And then if we want to go back to the Constitution later, fine, we'll do it. But I've been telling people, I'm worried about this for quite some time. The amount of, I call it the liberal Democrat screw it moment. There is no rule that applies to anything they want to do against Donald Trump. There is no rule that they are willing to follow. And the Constitution is meaningless to them. And I would say this now, looking from the outside in. If people want to get involved and make a difference, this is on the issue you make a difference on. If you want to get involved and take a stand, this is when you take a stand, you sign your name, you support, you advocate, and you also tell other people about what's happening right now because they're all organized and we're not like they are.
That's correct.
And it feels odd because it feels like there are moments like this where you feel like inevitably it could backfire on them, but they don't seem to care. It's kind of like
they don't
trivializing
care.
Impeachment. It's like now it's coming back around potentially to bite them, but they don't care because in the moment, you know, they did it once, and now when it gets, the roles are reversed, it just doesn't seem like it's going to even bother them.
No, you look at this impeachment, and when Ted started his podcast, he started on the first night of the impeachment.
Right.
At the end of the first night, it was like 1 o'clock in the morning.
I know.
And,
I was there.
Yeah, and he was going to, you remember. But I said, what would the Vegas odds have been on you now hosting a show and going through now 3 impeachments?
Right.
Since you started, he was like, never in a million years would any of us ever imagine.
Only been 3 impeachments in U.S. history until now.
And now it's game on.
Well, they've cheapened impeachment so much that it's become a meaningless vehicle. So what becomes the next vehicle? Litigation. Let me tell you about the litigation. So there are now 13 cases nationwide. So since we went on the air talking about this Monday, I mean, a little bit last week, too, we've gone from a case to 13. Our lawyers are back in court Monday while we're on air, so we may be able to break into it. And I think Mike Melito, who's representing our ACLJ interests out in Colorado, is going to be making that appearance. So midnight tonight is, though, the last day for this matching moment that we're in to help us fight for the Constitution. This is really your right to vote, is what Ben said. I mean, they're not following any rules. There's no rules. There's no playbook. They don't care. So what we have to do is beat them in court, which is what we have to do here. So, look, these folks need us. We're representing the Colorado Republican Party in that case. We're looking at a case in Oklahoma. We may be representing the chair of the Oklahoma Republican Party there. I mean, this is folks, I think we'll see it in 25 or 30 states. This is a way to totally disenfranchise a vote. So I want to encourage you today to go to aclj.org and support the matching moment. Any amount you donate, we're going to get a matching gift for it. It ends midnight tonight. We'll keep talking about the cases, obviously, but the fundraising portion of it for this moment ends tonight. But folks, you're talking about a fight. It's like Ben, what Ben just said is right. This is the most pivotal election cases in U.S. history.
And they're spending
money. To
remove
a candidate that qualifies from the ballot because you determined that he violated the 14th Amendment, Section 3, the disqualification clause, which has been used twice in U.S. history.
You look at the money side of it, and I think a lot of people don't understand how bad we're being outraised. The Democrats have unlimited money from the Soros of the world, from the Zuckerbergs of the world. The list goes on and on. We've seen this happen now. But the amount of cash that's coming into Democratic causes like this and the advocacy for getting rid of Donald Trump is massive. We are behind the eight ball. You know this, but it costs money to fight these people in court. And it takes the best and most brilliant legal minds. And I say this, again, coming from the outside, thank you guys for what you're doing. Because if you guys aren't doing this, there are good men and women who will never run for office if they think this is what can happen to them.
No,
we
true.
Talk to prospective candidates all the time. They're like, I don't want to put myself through it. I don't want to put my family through
it. Why would you?
Right? And I don't want to be sued. And I don't want to be financially broken. And I don't want to be in litigation for years. Look at the people that just connect to the president. They've tried to destroy every single one of these people with amounts of legal bills. I was talking to somebody the other day.
Seven in some cases.
Seven, who literally they said, I've had to make $1.2 million since I left the White House just to defend myself because my name was brought up around January the 6th.
Yeah.
And they're trying to bankrupt them. That's their goal.
Yeah, we've seen that time and time again.
Well, we saw it in Atlanta. I mean, you got, 18 co-defendants. You had lawyers that just showed up to represent their client. And the next thing you know, they're in a multi-count RICO indictment for simply showing up. Some of them didn't say a word.
Yeah.
But I mean, you talk about
it's an enemies list.
It is an enemies list, but you're right. The funding that comes in from the left on this, Logan, we've talked about this before, listen, we are blessed with the support we get, but let me tell you something. When you got a George Soros behind you or a group like that, it is literally an unlimited source.
Well, it's funding. It's also strategy. It's also people to be able to implement all of these kind of things and find the best and the brightest. As you said,
it's activist CAs too. They're fundraising off this. You vote for me, I'll go after Donald Trump and everyone around him, and just give me money so I can get elected.
Yeah, absolutely. We are at the end of this matching moment, but when I look at what we're doing here, beyond even just what's happening in Washington, D.C., like you said, you not only have the funding, you find the people who are willing to work on this and to get the best and the brightest to do it. Because when you do create your own echo chamber, a lot of stuff gets lost. All of a sudden, you don't get your message out there. So we have to have not just incredible legal minds, we have to have an incredible media team, which you could see the people that are working here because of this situation at hand. And if you don't have that, you get stuck behind a paywall and no one ever sees it.
Yeah, and we're never going to do. That's not what we do. But I will say this. We can't do it without you. And this is where, and by the way, the last 2 days, I mean, we've only done this for, this is a 3-day campaign. The last 2 days have been unbelievable. I mean, incredible. But we need it because, as I said, 13 states now litigating a law that has not been litigated since 1918.
Yeah.
1918. Okay, and went to the Supreme Court of the United States, and the guy ended up getting seated, by the way, that they were trying to disqualify. But it took going to the Supreme Court of the United States. This one's going to have, I think, multiple trips up there. But Ben, you said something important here, and we only got a minute. We really do need people to stand with us on this.
Absolutely.
This is critical.
I say it from an outsider looking in right now. If you want to get involved in fight and you want to get involved in politics, this is how you're going to make the biggest impact to protect and defend this country, our Constitution, Donald J. Trump as well.
Yeah, and it's Donald J. Trump today. It could be anybody else tomorrow. So defend the constitutional right to vote, your constitutional right to vote, by going to aclj.org. Any amount you donate, we get a matching gift for, and that means it is effectively doubled. So I encourage you to go to aclj.org, That's ACLJ.org to defend the constitutional right to vote. Matching moment ends midnight tonight. So make sure your voice is heard on this. It's that critical. Have a great weekend. But folks, we got a fight here. Stand with us at ACLJ.org.